This episode is brought to you by Ursa Minor Outfitters. Folks, I'm absolutely in love with my Loon mug. It's handmade. It's an absolute piece of art. Whether it's at the office or at the house, people keep asking to check it out. If you're not a Loon fan, they also have other beautiful mugs for wildlife fans of moose, bears, and eagles. They specialize in products highlighting the outdoors and local pride through quality design by local artists. They've even started expanding into items beyond mugs, like apparel, dog accessories, and soon candles and more. They also try to partner and highlight other small businesses, and in some cases, forgo profits in lieu of charitable giving to help their community, such as the dog rescue. So check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for our four-legged hiking partners, they also have a portable silicone dog bowl and also a sweet over-the-collar dog bandana. Go check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and don't forget to enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Welcome everyone to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm your host, Ivan, and together we'll embark on a weekly journey connecting with extraordinary hikers from all corners of the U.S. and beyond. As a warm embrace of summer envelops the Northern Hemisphere, we've had the privilege of conversing with remarkable individuals throughout this season. Their experiences and adventures will leave you yearning to hit the trails. And on today's episode, we have an amazing guest who's on an extraordinary journey to reach the highest points both domestically and abroad. His name is Mike, and you can follow him on Instagram at HighPointMike. During our chat with Mike, we learn about how a challenging climb up Mount Humphreys led him to get involved in high pointing. He shares with us some of the most unique and challenging high points he's tackled here in the United States, along with some of the amazing places he's visited abroad, including a military escort back down to a trailhead. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode with our guest, High Point Mike. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I have a really fun guest with me today. His nickname is High Point Mike. He's going to be talking and leading us through some of his adventures, most recently in South Africa, but some of his other adventures in the Middle East and here in the United States. Thanks, Mike, for joining us on the podcast. We always like to start off with our guests, how long they've been hiking for and how they got started.
Hey, Ivan. Yeah, so I'm actually relatively new to hiking. I had always done some family trips when I was younger, going to national parks and small hikes around, but it was maybe five hikes or so a year. But then back in February 2023, my sister and I, younger sister, decided to do a road trip from Las Vegas, Nevada to San Francisco. And the goal was to hit national parks, and she wanted to climb a 14,000 foot peak in the Sierra Nevadas. And so we get out there, Death Valley. Hiking around there was beautiful, one of my favorite national parks I've been to. And then we get to the Sierra Nevadas, and you can tell we were inexperienced hikers because this is in February and we're trying to climb a 14er, and that's quite the challenge. And our tools and everything we had consisted of not even micro spikes. We had yak tracks, which don't have the spikes at the end. It's just a little piece of metal. And so we're climbing this 14,000 foot peak. And well, it was 13,998 Mount Humphreys. And so in our mind, that consisted of a 14er. It's only missing 2 feet. If you jump a little bit, yeah. You can touch it. And again, our inexperience, we were in Badwater Basin below sea level about 36 hours before and had never been up that high. So we're climbing these like steep ice slopes because there's no trail. And we get to the one area called Peaklet Peak that we have been told about is a good turnaround point if you need to bail. It's at a little over 12,000 feet. And we're taking pictures. The scenery was amazing. And up there, I kind of thought, oh, wow. Like, this hiking stuff is so cool. The trip to the trailhead where we had to, our car was like going sideways over the snow in the road and bouncing like kind of like a roller coaster and hiking up the snow-covered mountain. We're over 6 feet of snow. Luckily, it was all condensed, so we weren't falling through too much. And then the views at the top, this was just an amazing experience. And up there, I thought, wow, it would be really cool to start climbing more mountains. And unfortunately, because of our inexperience, my sister got really bad altitude sickness and had to go to the hospital. And some of the people there said, yeah, we wouldn't have even done what you did, and we're experienced hikers. And So she was okay and everything, but it was like eye-opening to, one, how cool hiking is, but once you get to these mountains, also how dangerous it can be sometimes. And then I think that made me like hiking a little more, because like, oh, this is like, it can be kind of really thrilling in awesome way, but in the kind of a little bit of a dangerous way too.
That's a great introduction into hiking for you. A little bit of everything. Do you remember, Mike, like how many feet of elevation gain that hike could have been? Because that seems like it's up there, starting from, you know, the trailhead to the peak.
Yeah, I think we made it to as far as 9,000 something feet. I don't remember exactly. So granted, we only made it to 12,000 feet in a few hours. So it was about 3,000 feet gain, but we had never done a hike like that before. And so at the time, that was a lot for us.
But it sparked the idea that kind of that we'll be touching base on here in a little bit. But, you know, before we started recording, you mentioned that you're originally from the East Coast. You're now in Colorado. How was the hiking scene in the East Coast? And how's the hiking scene now in Colorado for you?
Yeah, well, they're two completely different environments. I think that's why I didn't get really into hiking when I lived in Maryland on the East Coast. I didn't really enjoy hiking through the woods. Sometimes it's fun every once in a while, but every hike seemed to be the same besides a few outliers. You have Old Rag in Virginia, which is one of my favorite hikes, but it didn't hit as much as Colorado. And so I moved out to Colorado in fall of 2022. And that like leapfrogged all of my hiking. And because the culture out here, everyone talks about hiking. If you sit in a coffee shop quietly and listen, I was talking with this about my friend Nahar the other day. If you're in a coffee shop, you hear snowboarding, you hear skiing, you hear hiking, you hear camping, you hear people talking about gear, and everything has to do with some type of outdoors activities. And obviously the difference too with the mountains, you have 14,000 foot peaks, 58 of them, depending on who you ask. And versus in Maryland, the highest point in Maryland is around 2,000-3,000 feet. So you have a lot more diversity in the nature and the different types of hikes you can do.
And I definitely think it's always a hard choice between Colorado and Utah for like the hiking hub or outdoors hub, but they're so close that you could just travel within a day between both of them. And like you said, Colorado has all those 14ers. Now, we've been talking about high pointing and high pointers, and you have an amazing journey ahead of you that you hope to one day be the first person to hike every high point in every country. Can you share what high pointing is and how you got started in that? What would you call it? Not section of hiking, but kind of like subgroup of hiking?
Maybe you can call it peak bagging. Peak bagging with other cultural experiences is like what I like to call it, especially for country high pointing. But yeah, to be the first person, I have a long way to go. I've done 12, and I have, according to my list, I have 184 more to go. So my lists of country high points consist of all countries recognized by the United Nations, and then Antarctica and the two overseeing states of Palestine and Vatican City. So it adds 196 total, but that's just country high pointing. If you look at like the Wikipedia definition of high pointing, you see it's the highest point in a certain area. So what I like about high pointing so much is that you can pick anywhere and find the high point. It could be country high points like I want to do, which is a little on the extreme and very expensive side. You can do U.S. state high points, which maybe half of them or so you can do a zero hiking experience. The other half you can build up to it quite easily. You get to Denali, so quite harder, but the majority of like state high points, I feel like, is something that everyone can get involved in. There's also people who do national park high points in the US, done a few of those. And then if you want to go really out there, you can do county high points. So this is a really, I thought country high pointers were a really small group. I've only really seen a few dozen online, but then you get to county high points and it's even lower. And there's these people who are going around the US and finding these high points. Sometimes you have difficulties because it could be on the side of a mountain that's really hard to get to, especially out west. You have the high points that are in the middle of fields on private land and farms, and farmers don't really like you. Like in Iowa, they don't want you going out into the middle of their cornfield to touch a point of ground that's a millimeter higher than everywhere else around. So I got into high pointing because I was like, wow, I can make so much out of this. I had a hard time deciding on what hikes to do, especially in Colorado. There's so many, there's tens of thousands of hikes on all trails. And so how do you decide which hike to do? And part of it was, okay, I'm goal-oriented, but also it helps me to make decisions on saying, okay, these are mountains I want to climb, maybe some lakes I want to do added on to that. So high pointing has helped me, one, to be able to decide on what hikes to do. But then two, is something that I can do with all of my friends and no matter their hiking experience.
No, that's really great, Mike. I've been toying with the idea because I've had a couple guests from the East Coast, especially in upstate New York, where they have all these challenges for like the highest points in the Adirondacks or in the Catskills. So I was like, oh, maybe I could do that in Washington. But then I started looking at the list of peaks between like 5,000 and 10,000. And it's just like a huge long list. And some of them are truly hard to get to. So then I started coming down to like my county. Okay, what county list do I have? So I'm still playing around with that idea of maybe doing like all the 5,000 footers in my county, because that seems like a doable list. But yeah, there's so many ways you can approach hiking and so many different avenues you can do to kind of challenge yourself to get out there and experience new things.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be just one high point. Like you said, you can find a few 5,000 peaks. And so it's really cool to be able to find stuff that way.
A little bit of everything for folks in whatever level of hiking they're in. Now, living in Colorado, Mike, you have access to some of the tallest mountains in the continental United States. What's been your experience so far with the 14ers in your neck of the woods?
So yeah, the 14ers are the 14,000 foot peaks here. Depending on who you ask, there's different numbers. I say there's 58 because there's 58 named ones. Some people say there's 53, 54, 56, based off of some of the peaks are closer to another 14er. Mm. And so because they're so close, sometimes the shorter 14er doesn't make lists. I forget what the correct term is. But if you're too close to another peak, sometimes it's not actually labeled as a peak, depending on different forms and techniques of labeling mountains. But I say there's 58 because that's the highest number. So to me, that's what it is. But the 14ers here have, if you ask me a list of like my 10 favorite hikes that I've done, the 14ers may make up about half of them. They have one because they're so high up. You get to the top, you have amazing views. I had one I did in August 2022, and there was snow at the top, but we also got snowed on, hailed on, sleeted on, and as we got lower, rained on, and then had to go through a swamp at the bottom. We have mud going up to our knees, so it's just a crazy experience along the trail. You don't really know what's going to happen. You can do them during different times of the year for different difficulties. You have anything from the different types of hiking, labeling class one, which would be an easy trail, class two and three, which is a little more scrambling and different depending on how much the trail drops off and your risk of dying if you slip. And then you have the class four peaks, which are like sometimes you have knife edges that It's just really thin to walk across the top of them. And your feet, sometimes I've like scooted across these knife edges and you have your foot dangling on each side. And if you sway too much or a wind comes, it's a few thousand feet drop to the side. So with the 14ers, even though they're all 14,000 feet, you get so many different trail conditions and views. And it's been a really good experience out here. Plus, it's good for training for other peaks as well. I have these amazing mountains in my backyard, a few hours drive from Denver, and it's good for maybe training for Everest one day. There are people who do like Quandary Peak near Breckenridge, Colorado, and it's a training for Everest. You go up it 4 or 5 times in one day. Some people running it because you have amazing endurance and good for them. I can't do that yet. Maybe one day, but it's just awesome to have this in my backyard versus in Maryland. I had woods and trees, and it kind of gets for me that it gets boring and isn't quite as exciting after a while.
Yeah, and you've been able to already check off a dozen of the 14ers there in Colorado. Has there been a peak that you've done so far that's been the biggest challenge for you as far as like physically getting up to the summit?
Yes. So I think my favorite hike has also been the most challenging. So Long's Peak, which is also the highest point in Rocky Mountain National Park. If you're driving anywhere towards the park from Denver, from Boulder, even from Estes Park, which is like the main hub touristy area of Rocky Mountain National Park, you can see this massive mountain. It kind of looks like an upside down taco sometimes the way it's turned. And so it's really unique. It's my favorite mountain that I've climbed so far. But the whole starting from the hike to finishing was very challenging because, first of all, we set our alarms for midnight to do this hike. And so I've never woken up that early for a hike by like hours. Earliest I've woken up before this peak was maybe 5 or 6 a.m. to go hiking. And so you tell people, it's like, why are you waking up at midnight to go hiking? And it's hard because the night before you have the anticipation for climbing a peak and like, okay, I'll go to bed at 6. And then it's 8. Like, okay, I'll go to bed now. It doesn't work. It ends up being 10 o'clock till you fall asleep. And you only have 2 hours of sleep. But I had friends visiting from the East Coast, Blaze and CJ, and we're like, let's go climb this mountain. They had already done Elbert earlier in the week, which is another 14er and the highest point in Colorado. And so I didn't get to join them for that. So we go do this hike. We get to the trailhead at around 2:15 in the morning. And we had to park almost a half mile from the trailhead because there were so many cars there already. This parking lot's very small. It maybe fits 40, 50 cars. And then it's a really thin road leading up to the trailhead. And the cars are just lined almost all the way to the bottom. And so we're looking at each other like, this is absolutely crazy. We thought we were early, but you have all these other people who got here earlier. Maybe they're camping farther up the mountain, but you could see there were a lot of people. Finally, after about 2.5 miles, we got above the tree line and you see lines of headlamps just all the way up the mountain. And then you turn around and all the way down, you have the view into Denver at 4 a.m. And so just above sunrise, being above the mountain before sunrise and then at sunrise is just an amazing view. What made this hard was maybe after about 5 miles, you get to this area called the Boulder Field, where it's just, as it says, it's just giant boulders just laying around. You have to be able to walk over them. I put my hand down on one and saw it was next to a spider that was about the same size as my hand and pulled away really fast. Like, okay, my hands are not touching the rocks again for a while. And finally make it through the boulder field, get to a spot called the keyhole, which is where the hard part begins. It's called the keyhole because it literally looks like an actual keyhole. It's a really small, flat rock that's standing vertically. And you walk through it, you get to the other side, and you see a drop off of a few thousand feet into the valley below. And you have a few areas. The first area is called the ledges, where you're walking on a ledge. So we'd already gone about 6 miles. It took us maybe 3-4 hours with stops and eating breakfast along the way. And we just have 1 mile left to get to the top. And so we have the ledges. think about a step you're going up in your house or in a building somewhere, and sometimes the ledges are that thin. You're walking on just one step, and you have to hold the rock on one side of you and sidestep. Then you get to a spot called the tro, where you can go straight up, but you basically switch back as much as possible up this really, really steep slope. And at this point, we're at 13,000 feet. And so we're already pretty high, and you have this steep slope where if you like lean backwards, you feel yourself falling over the edge. If you have vertigo, it's not a spot to be. I was like very nervous. And then you have so many people already, some are going down, some are going up. And so you have rocks coming down. So you hear every once in a while someone yell rock, and you look up and make sure there's not a boulder coming at you that you have to dodge. And then it still keeps going. This is only a mile long from the ledges. Then finally, it's called home stretch, which is another very steep climb, except there are less footholds. You have to put your feet in cracks somewhere, grab your hands in small cracks on the side. You're not walking up rocks. This is just a slant. Again, this is in August 2022, and it had snowed the night before. So there's some ice now. There are people going up and down at different speeds. And how do you like go around and circumnavigate these people with the ice? And so the last mile ended up taking us about 2 hours, just being careful, taking breaks. Finally get to the top, and I think that's what made it more challenging. The view wasn't as great as other 14ers, but the journey getting there was incredible. I ended up getting altitude sickness, which also added to some of the challenge. It's funny, I tell my friends that we were at the summit for over half an hour, and I maybe remember 5 minutes of being at the summit, kind of like blacked out a little bit. And I remember sitting down, eating some food, drinking some water, and then we're leaving. It's like, wait a minute. But then I look at the timestamps on my phone, and it was over 30 minutes for the pictures I took at the top. And so the altitude sickness really took a toll on me there. It ended up being over 5,000 feet of elevation gain and 14 miles round trip on an out and back trail. So that was one of my first hikes in Colorado. So also added to the challenge, but it's definitely a difficult hike, but still one of my favorite hikes. And I think once I add more and more hikes to my list, it's going to stay up there as one of my favorites.
Oh, what an amazing and exhilarating experience. You know, one thing I noticed, Mike, and I don't see it here in the Pacific Northwest as much. I see it in Colorado. But because there's so much boulder fields and rocks, especially as you get to the summit, is that why you see a lot of hikers wearing the helmets? Is in case they do fall or a rock does come tumbling down?
Yes. And I need to buy a helmet still. I have a ski helmet. I was like, I could wear that if I need to as a last resort. But especially on these higher 14,000, once you get above 12,000 feet, because of the loose rock, and if you're on a popular trail with other people around, the rocks can come loose so easily. So it's nice to have a helmet, as you don't really need one. It's more of a just in case, a one in a million thing where a rock comes tumbling down. There was one time where I was up at about somewhere between 11 and 12,000 feet, and we're coming down. There's three of us coming down the mountain, and then there's two other people who started after us are coming up, and I kicked a rock loose, and these people are below me. So I'm yelling, rock, rock, rock. They're not looking up. And you think of a rock rolling down a hill. This rock flew down the hill. We were quite a distance away from these people, and it took like three bounces before it got to where they were at. It went flying in the air, hit another rock, split into pieces. Luckily, there was no involuntary manslaughter, and the rock went by them. But yeah, there are these just small, random off chances that the rock could come down. And so if it hits your head, it's nice to have a helmet.
That's a different level of hiking, but even in the rock screes that we have here, you just never know. It could just be one step, and it could cause, you know, a little rock slide to happen. But it's great that you guys are aware of it, and you vocalize it as best as you can to people down below. Now, Mike, you're also not just tackling Colorado's highest peaks, but you're also venturing out and trying to reach each state's highest peaks. What have been some of the more memorable high peaks across the country that you've been able to visit so far?
So my first one, you mentioned Adirondacks earlier. My first one was Mount Marcy, the Adirondacks, at about 5,300 feet. And I accidentally did this hike. I didn't mean to. This is when I first started saying, oh, high pointing is cool. But after my first hiking trip with my sister in California, my first real hiking trip, I like to call it, I get back to Maryland. It's like, wow, this is terrible. There's no mountains with snow here. I want to go and have some more crazy experiences, like climbing that almost 14er in the Sierra Nevadas. And so I'm doing research where I can go, that there's snow at the beginning of May still. And so the Adirondacks came up as still having snow. And so I booked my first ever solo trip to go there, spend a few days, do hiking around the Adirondacks, see how many of the 4,000 foot peaks I can get. And I had hiked one peak, Algonquin, which is the second highest point in New York, and it was right next to Marcy. So it has similar views. So I said, well, I don't need to climb Marcy. I went and did some other really cool hikes, Indian Head, which is a beautiful hike in the Adirondacks, especially I went in May, but I've seen pictures of it during fall colors, and that spot just looks beautiful. It's a rock where just looking over a lake and have two mountains on each side of you, it's a really, really beautiful view. So I did all these. And the last day everyone says Marcy is a hard hike because I think it's around 14, 15 miles. And I woke up in the morning and I thought, no, I'm not doing this hike. Well, I slept in, finally leave. It's like noon. And that's starting to get really late in the day to start a 14, 15 mile hike. And I was like, well, I'll just do it. Why not? I'm out here. It would be kind of cool to climb the highest point in New York. And this is before I even knew high pointing was a thing. I just knew it was the highest point in New York. So I get up there, go through the snow a little bit, which was fun. The views at the top are some of my favorite views of a state high point that I've seen. And I FaceTime family for a little bit and say, hey, I'm at the highest point in New York. This is really cool. I get back down and I say, okay, well, maybe this is something I could start doing these different state high points. State high points was where I first started. And I was like, okay, yeah, it helps with, I want to visit all 50 states. So I can do this while also visiting other things in the States as well. So the first one is always going to stick with me for a little bit.
Great way to spark the idea. Now, Mike, you also mentioned there's states with unique high points where it might be in the middle of a cornfield or, out in the middle of a populated area possibly. What's the most unique one you've been to where it might be easily accessible to anybody?
So I'll give you a unique one and then a unique hike. My experience in Oklahoma was completely different than what I thought would happen. So the beginning of 2023, I wanted to do a road trip down to Big Bend National Park, which if you get the chance to go there, that place is amazing. So much, it exceeded all of my expectations. But on the way down, I said, oh, I'll go, the Oklahoma High Points is kind of on the way, so I'll go and hit that one. It's called Black Mesa. And it was snowing in Colorado, so I was like, good, it'll be good to go south, get away from the snow. Well, the storm decided to follow me, and it eventually went all the way down into Texas. So driving down to Texas, I was in the snow, which was crazy. But I get to the trailhead 10, 11 o'clock at night for Black Mesa, and I look at my dashboard and what the temperature is. I don't have service here. It says it's 2 degrees outside, according to my car. And so, okay, I'm not camping outside. The snow's coming down. The road getting there, forgot to mention, we're going down and it says no snow plowing for the next 50 some miles. Well, I had about 50 more miles to go to the trailhead. So I got a little worried. I made it, but sleeping in my car, it was very cold. It definitely went below zero that night. I woke up so many times, cold, and you do a few sit-ups and then curl up and go back to sleep. But I didn't expect there to be snow in Oklahoma. Plus, the mesas were really cool. Always how do you describe a mesa? It's take out the inside of a canyon and then place it somewhere. And that's what this area looked like. And wow. It was really impressive. I didn't expect to have views in Oklahoma. I expected it to be Kansas, where it's just flat and maybe one tiny rolling hill that's the tallest. So Oklahoma is really unique just because you don't expect it to look like that. And then my hardest biggest high point that I've done so far, and I kind of made it a unique attempt in doing it, was Mount Washington in New Hampshire. So after doing like, this was actually my second high point then on Mount Washington, and it was in the summer. So luckily there was no snow there, but there was some frost a few nights before, but no storm clouds coming in. It was good. There's something called the Presidential Traverse. And so you go over, I think it's 13 peaks.
Wow.
And they're all named after presidents. And so the main route up Washington is, I think, 6.8 miles. Marcy was around 15. So I'm like, okay, 6.8 miles, that's not enough of a hike. I need to make it harder. The Presidential Traverse is about 22 miles with 9,000 feet of elevation gain. And what makes it hard is, usually when you see a mountain with 9,000 feet of elevation, you're going mostly up the first half and mostly down the second half. But this, because you're going over peaks, you're going up, down, up, down, up, down. So you have elevation gains still at the end, and that makes it challenging. But I woke up in the morning and I had never done a solo hike by myself starting at 2 a.m. That was my goal. My alarm goes off at 1 and then I start reading about bear attacks. And I was so worried. I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? I was like, do I even do this? I came out here for this. I have to do it. I ended up starting around 2:30, 2:45, the trailhead. I was going to sit in my car and wait till I saw someone. When I pulled in, I saw someone going up the trail. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to be good. There's at least one other person nearby. I started later than normal. So the first peak, I forget the name of the first peak, I think it was Madison. I decided to run up it to catch sunrise and say, okay, that killed me for the rest of the hike. But luckily, Mount Washington is known for having crazy weather. But I had been up there before when I was younger, maybe 10 or so, when I went to New Hampshire for a soccer tournament. And I remember my dad's glasses being blown off him as soon as we walked out the door up top. We took the cog railway up to the top instead of hiking, just like 100 plus mile per hour winds a lot of the time. And so we had a beautiful, sunny bluebird day. And I couldn't have wished for better conditions, but I was halfway through. I was like, oh, this is going to be tough. the last few miles. Well, before that, I was supposed to get a taxi back. And when I had service at one point, the taxi driver called me and canceled on me. And
oh, no.
He said, yeah, I'm not going to be able to pick you up. And this is a point-to-point trail. So I'm like, there's no way I'm going 22 miles back across all these mountains.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to do. The last few miles were terrible, just walking over rocks the whole way. I had service and I ended up calling my mom and I'm like, talk me through this, please. I'm losing my mind. I never want to see rocks again. Because I got to the bottom and there were two people, one of them from Maryland, like me at the time, which was cool. We had like run against each other run at the same track meet in Maryland, but she and I, we didn't know each other, but they drove me an hour back to my car, which I was so grateful for. The people
right
up there
on.
Were so nice. But doing the Mount Washington via the Presidential Traverse was just such a unique experience, starting at 2 a.m. and then ending at almost sunset. I feel like when you add on and do more than just the peak itself, it makes the trail so much more unique, so much more special. So I don't want to be just a peak bagger. I want to bag all these peaks, but I want to have other experiences along the way and see other things, do other things. So
I'm glad you were able to find a trip back or a ride back. That's a wonderful trail magic there. Now, Mike, you've also started going internationally. We kind of touched base on that. The one trip that caught my attention was out to the Middle East. You hit the United Emirates, Jordan, and Oman. And Oman had a unique experience that I'm hoping you can touch base on. But how was that trip and how did that kind of come about?
Yes, this was January 2023. So my first country high pointing. So after doing some state high points in 2022, I thought, well, what else is there? Like this, for me, I'm like, the state high points is going to go by fast because in a year, I had done 24 of them. And I was like, okay, well, this isn't for me. this isn't a full lifetime goal. What can I do to make a lifetime goal? Found out about country high pointing online. And I said, okay, this is crazy, but I'm going to go and do it. See if I can do it. No one's ever done it before. Hey, maybe one day I could be the first person to do it, even though there are people way ahead of me right now. I have to catch up. But my younger sister was doing a study abroad in Abu Dhabi, UAE, United Arab Emirates. So for people who don't know where that country is, it's just north of Saudi Arabia on the Arabian Peninsula. And I thought, hey, like, I can help you move in. We can go and do these little trips together. So we plan to visit some places around UAE, fly to Jordan, see some cool places in Jordan as well, and then fly to Oman and see some places there, and like turn it into a little trip before she started school. Unfortunately, we climbed the high point in UAE. That was unique in itself, in that you're kind of illegally crossing the Omani border there, because the high point is right on the border. The actual mountain, Jabal Bil Ais, is in Oman, but the high point is a ridge on the border. And so it's right on the border of Oman and UAE. And there's a sheikh's mansion at the top. And so there are helicopters up there. You can see all the super fancy white cars at the top. We saw some people, they pointed at us. I like gave a little wave back, but I was like, okay, maybe it's time to leave. You go to places where you don't really see people. So it's like, are you allowed to be there? Yes. Is it frowned upon? Maybe a little bit, but there was a trail to the top. So we took it, followed that the whole way. We were only able to do that one together because when we got to, we flew out of Dubai to go to Jordan. And unfortunately, when we arrived, they accidentally activated my sister's student visa instead of her tourist visa. Mm. And because this is around the new year, not a lot of things are open. She was supposed to get a medical examination. So they wouldn't let her leave until she got a medical examination. Oh, so no. We stayed in UAE a little longer, deciding what to do. In the end, she said, I'm going to be here. I'll be able to do trips of my own really easily. Flights between these countries are $100, $200, $300 versus getting over there is over $1,000. So once you're there, the flights are so much cheaper than even flying around the U.S. sometimes. There's this one company, Wizz Air, like sometimes $40 for a flight ticket between countries. It's a little sketchy. They won't let you check bags, or if you do check a bag, it's like ridiculously expensive. It's kind of like Spirit Airlines on steroids, I guess. Okay. although I am a big fan of Spirit for cheap flights. But we decided, okay, well, I'll just go myself. So went to Jordan, saw Petra, Wadi Rum Desert. These countries surprised me because Jordan themselves, they're set up for tourism in these areas that I went to. The high point is in the Wadi Rum Desert. So you're driving across this red sand for 45 minutes. Then you climb this mountain. It's just rocks. There's no dirt. It's just rocks stacked on top of each other to the top of this mountain. And so that was really cool. But definitely the coolest of the Middle East trip was Oman High Point, because the actual high point is on a military base. So you read trip reports online. Some people sneak in. Some of them get caught. Some of them don't get caught. Some of them try to talk to the people there. Nothing's bad has happened when they've gotten caught. They just question you and make sure you're not a spy trying to get on this airbase. So I'm looking and say, okay, how do I get to this high point? Because to me, it doesn't count unless you touch the actual high point itself. Mm-hmm. And so I start this hike. There's the highest legal points, which you can get to. So I went there. It's about 100 feet shorter than the actual high point. I get there. It started as a sunny day. As I get to the top, the clouds come in and I got to watch the view over Oman disappear. There was like a window in the clouds, and slowly the clouds came in, and I had it for a few minutes while I was at the top, and then the view was gone. I was a little upset about that, but I think that actually helped me to touch the highest point on the airbase, because I go and I start backtracking, going up to this military base, and the gate was open when I got there. So I'm debating, hey, do I just go in? It's cloudy. You can't see really anything. There's one building and then one kind of like weather shaped dome at the top, and one of those domes they use for the weather. And the high point is on the other side of that building. And so I'm debating, do I go? Then this guy comes out of the clouds. So on my way up, I was like, okay, when I see someone, what do I do? Do I beg to get on the high point? Do I say, hey, I need to use the bathroom? Do I say I'm out of water? How do I see about getting into this base? And I start talking to him. It's like, hey, like the highest point in Oman, Jebel Shams is here. Is there a way I can get in? And he says, no, you can't enter. Okay, I expected that. So yeah. I start talking to him a little bit. He asked me where I'm from, talk about the U.S. He ended up being into hiking. And all of the soldiers there, they know the high point of Oman is there. He's like, yeah, I always talk about it. People come up and try to get in. And he's like, he looked behind him and you can't see the building there that's at the top. So and there's other people there, obviously. He says, okay, quick, you can go in, touch it and then leave. And he's like, really strict, no pictures. I'm like, okay, fine. We kind of did like a half jog over there. We spent maybe 3 minutes inside the base and it's just more just a barbed wire fence with two buildings. And I got a picture on my compass, on my phone for the GPS coordinates. And then I'd been tracking it on my Garmin. So I touched the highest point and then got out. And we said, bye, leave. I go maybe 5-10 minutes down the road and I see car lights come behind me. And now I'm like, oh no, I'm in big trouble. And these four guys in a pickup pull up next to me. The driver says, get in. And I don't know if this is a good get in. Is this a bad get in that, hey, they're going to take me back to the base? And so I'm questioning, like, where are we going? And he just keeps saying, get in. I'm like, okay, fine. I get in. There's three of us squished in the back of this truck. He said, yeah, we'll take you to your car. It's like, well, my car is at the trailhead, not at the bottom of the road. And they're like, that's fine. We'll take you. It was out of their way. It was nice of them. It was already dark at this point. I'd run out of water. I'd already been about 15 miles of hiking, 5,000, 6,000 feet of elevation. So I was really happy to get a ride back. But they're talking and they asked me where I was from. And I said, the U.S. And then everything went silent. Oh no, this isn't good. One guy said something in Arabic. I only know a few words in Arabic. And it was definitely like something negative about the U.S. So I was a little worried. Then I tried talking to them some more and they started opening up. Finally got back to my car. And so it's kind of like having a military escort for the high point. So that was a really cool experience. But every one of those countries surprised me. It was so nice. Most of the time you feel safer than maybe in some cities in the U.S. And so I try to tell family and friends that, yeah, go into these other countries. They may get a bad rap on the news and social media, but unless you walk down a dark alley at night, you don't want to do that in the U.S. either. That these countries are, the people are nice. It's usually pretty safe.
Now, you most recently came back from a trip to South Africa, and you got to do a few peaks there. Can you share a little bit about that trip and that experience?
After doing a high pointing trip to the Middle East, I thought, okay, what's another trip that I could easily do in like May of 2023. So I'm looking in the Americas, and so South America is a little more challenging. So I knocked that out. So not doing that yet. Central America, you don't want to go there in the summer, heat wise for hiking. For beaches, but not for hiking. So I said, okay, nothing in this hemisphere. Where can I go? And I ended up doing 9 countries in Southern Africa. I'll list them out, but South Africa, Lesotho, Eswatini, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, Malawi, and then a quick trip to the island of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. So it took me 32 days for all of these. And kind of like what I was saying before, the goal of doing these hikes or going to these countries was for these hikes and these mountains. The tallest one being 11,000, the lowest one being 2,000. So it ranged quite a bit, but I also wanted to experience the culture. So for example, in Botswana, I planned to hit the high point there, Otsi Hill, which took me a total of an hour to do. It's a very easy, simple hike. The hard part is getting there. But I ended up spending 4 nights there. I planned to spend 1 night in Botswana and just drive through and move on to Zimbabwe for more high points. But I talked to locals, talking to some other people, ended up doing some really cool safaris in Botswana. So it became a really good experience to say, hey, one for me, like, don't just go to these countries to climb mountains, try to do other things. I had other safaris planned. Like, how can I go to Africa and not do a safari and see animals, but you see elephants on just this, you're driving down the road and you see this big gray blob on the side. It's just an elephant just right on the side of the main highway. And you pull over and take pictures. And I don't know, for me, seeing my first elephant there was just breathtaking. And it's like, wow, this is so cool. Like, you see maybe deer, or every once in a while in Colorado, you get a moose and that's amazing. But seeing an elephant is just a completely different level.
With the island of Mauritius, Mike, were you able to do the highest point there?
Yes. So that one is a long name, Piton de la Petite Rivière Noire. It has a French name, but that one's at 2,700 feet, which is one of the lowest country high points I've done. But the hike was cool, going on the ridgeline a little bit, the view at the top to see the blue waters around. But for me, we spent 5 days in Mauritius. The rest of the Mauritius trip stood out more to me. And this is one of those places where I'm really, really glad I don't just fly there and then leave the next day, because it's an easy high point. It took me maybe 2 hours to do. But I was actually there with my younger sister, because she was on that side of the world. She joined me for the Mauritius part. But we saw these Hindu temples, and they were very colorful. There's 300, 400 some on the island. That was really amazing to see. And then we did a few other hikes. There was another hike, Le Chadi Les Souris. That one was kind of a ridgeline hike up to a peak with like a little bit of a knife edge in it. And you had to do some climbing a little bit to get to the top. That hike I thought was way cooler than the High Point hike. We did a helicopter ride around the island. And what Mauritius is famous for is this, it's called an underwater waterfall, but it has a cliff right on the beach. That's about a 2,000 foot drop right under the beach. You can only see it from above, but the way the sand moves and the water moves, it looks like there's an underwater waterfall there. So it's an illusion. And it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, but that view from the helicopter was amazing. We tried to do a seaplane, but they were all booked out months in advance. So helicopter is a little more expensive, but if you go to Mauritius, how can you not see that view? And so that was probably one of the best views I've had. The waterfalls always have like the best view. Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, I added that on to my trip when I drove across Zimbabwe, which was an experience itself. But Victoria Falls was one. We're walking down the trail. You can hire a tour group. I said, I'm just going to go by myself. It's a asphalt walking path. That's not too challenging. And you get around the corner to the first overlook, which is point two. And I just let out an audible wow. It was, you have the rainbows going over, the double, triple rainbows over the falls. You have the falls, which are beautiful themselves. There's a tour group behind me. Everyone does the same thing here. Wow, 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 wow. As you walk around the corner, that was really incredible to see. The waterfalls are always really neat.
Oh man, what an amazing experience. And I know that you're in the process of writing the blog about the trip, and we'll be sure to link the website on the episode show notes so people can check out your experience there a little bit more in detail. Now, Mike, when you do reach your summit, is there any regular custom or routine that you do once you make it to the top of the peak?
So I'm really simple. I take a selfie. I take pictures around. Sometimes I'll set up my tripod and get pictures of me, but I always have to get a selfie at the top. Sometimes I'll do other things. When I hiked Sepetwa Peak on Mount Mulanje in Malawi, so the high point of Malawi, I had met someone the night before and she said, okay, I'll join you. His name was Shirelli. And in the morning, we're like, let's take some beers to the top and have a summit beer. And so the hike ended up being over 8,000 feet of elevation gain to the summit in about 10 miles. So I have 4 beers in my bag, and they're the glass bottles, so they're even heavier. But yeah, sometimes the summit beer at the top, the 14ers, like in Colorado, I'll do 14 push-ups at the top. That's kind of funny.
Okay.
But the main one is a selfie at the top of the summit.
One thing that I enjoyed from a guest that was in the Lake District in the UK, she would bop the top. Are you a bopper? Like once you make the peak, do you touch it with your hand?
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes if there's like a beacon at the top marking the high point, I'll definitely touch it. Okay. I usually stand on top of it too. If I have to touch it with my hand, my feet, sit there, everything. Yeah.
Now, Mike, when it comes to your hikes and high pointing, what would you consider to be your most valuable piece of hiking gear?
So I invested in some very warm Gore-Tex mittens. And so for Colorado winter hiking, I'll wear shorts. I'll wear like one layer. But if my hands get cold, I'm miserable on the hike. I'm complaining the whole time. These mittens, they're bright red and they're about the size of oven mitts. So it looks like I'm about to take cookies out of the oven or something. And they're good for skiing as well. So those have been, for at least cold winter hiking, those have been an amazing piece of equipment that I like to have. When I'm going high pointing in other countries, my phone is nice to have, but you don't know if you're going to have service. So a compass and a map are key because sometimes there's no trails. In South Africa, I ended up bushwhacking. It was a 25-mile, two-day hike for the High Point Mafadi, but I ended up bushwhacking and there being no trails for more than half of the hike. And without having a map or a compass, it would have been a little bit difficult to complete the hike, and I had big chance of getting lost there. I even got lost a little with the map and compass, and just through the trees, you can't see anything. Everything's overgrown. You have bushes up to your eyes. So one, you don't want to step on a poisonous snake, the black mambas, the cobras, but then you're trying to make sure you're going the right direction. So,
definitely. Now, Mike, we're officially halfway through the year when we're recording this episode. Do you have any upcoming trips for 2023, both domestically and maybe internationally?
Yes. So everything right now is for the rest of the year be on high points. Domestically, the Nebraska High Point is an hour and a half drive from me. Tried to go there earlier in 2023, but the road was closed because of snow and it's on a bison reserve. So it's not really a good idea to jump the fence and go touch the High Point. So that one I'm going to be hitting soon, and that'll put me to exactly halfway done. The state high points at 25. The Black Hills in South Dakota, I'm planning on going there, doing some camping this year. All the ones that are closer drive to Colorado, so maybe go up to Utah or Wyoming, Montana. Those have been on my radar and trying to think how to make those happen. New Mexico is pretty close. So forget the name of the peak. It's in Taos, New Mexico. And so that one's supposed to be really beautiful views. For country high pointing, I have this list of every country, the mountain, which ones can be easily be combined together. So Europe is very easy to combine a lot together, a similar trip. Because if you're flying over for one country, two countries, and then flying back, keep doing that. The plane ticket is the most expensive part. Once you get over there, you can be really cheap, because public transportation is great. Food is usually cheaper in these more rural areas. So it's kind of saying, okay, how can I add on multiple countries at once? So you have like, okay, all the Scandinavian countries, I can do them together. There's a few Eastern European countries, the Baltic countries, I can do together. And then Central Europe is something I can maybe knock out 12 high points in the span of a month, finding the time for a month to go to Europe. So those are on my mind. And then I want to do Southwestern Africa. So Namibia, Angola, and then Central Africa. So Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, Democratic Republic of the Congo, which the high point of Uganda and DRC is the same mountain, Mount Stanley. Oh. And so there's a few countries in the world. So Everest, it's the high point in Nepal and China, Stanley in Uganda and DRC, Mont Blanc in Italy and France. And then there's one more, I want to say it's It's in Eastern Europe. I forget which one it is, but there's a few where you can knock out two countries in one, which is kind of nice. Then also, I was thinking this year, need to start planning soon, but another friend was interested in Aconcagua in Argentina, which is the highest point in South America. I think it's around 23,000 feet. I forget exactly, but doing that, and then I'm like, well, I get there, I'm already acclimated, why not do the high point of Chile as well? So those, nice. Those taller peaks, once it gets over 20,000 feet, that's when, okay, you can only do one or two per trip. And so I have a lot of ideas. I have my like basic itineraries written out for so many different options, but it's just, okay, being able to find the right time to be able to do these countries. Because again, also for South America, you have to go during a certain time of year. You have to do that in their summer. So December, January is really the main times to be climbing down there. Pico de Orizaba in Mexico, skipped over that one, that's at 18,000 feet, which would be my highest mountain. I was thinking of doing that in sometime around Thanksgiving of this year. So there's a lot of different ones. Okay, how can I piece these all together? So it's kind of like a puzzle trying to figure out. And then also adds to the puzzle because some of these mountains, you can't find information about them being climbed anywhere online. You have to do your own research. You have to use the SRTM satellite data to find where the highest point is. Luckily, a few people have done this before, so I don't have to do that for a lot. But some countries you don't know the high point of. And so it's a journey to be able to find these places in the first place. And then the second journey is how you get there. And then the third part is actually climbing the mountain. So it's a lot of moving pieces. So just have to figure out the right time for all of them.
Oh, how exciting. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing all your trips on Instagram for the rest of this year. And I think you're right. You know, for me, when it comes to places that I see on Instagram, especially, you know, that aren't tagged, like half of the joy is doing my research, trying to locate it. And then, you know, the last little bit is actually getting there. But the whole journey itself is a truly rewarding from start to finish.
It makes it special than just typing in a trail online and then going and doing it. You have to research. And then some of these countries, they have geopolitical issues. And so then it may take a year or 2 years to get visas to be able to go there. And they ask why you're going there. Like, I want to hike this mountain. No, there's something up there. Why would someone want to fly to hike this mountain? And it's trying to explain what you're doing. And then they have more questions. And you have countries like Sudan right now, which unfortunately has been having a lot of issues. You have North Korea. How do you climb that mountain? It's a lot of research and trying to figure things out to make it happen.
Well, I'm looking forward to following you along on this journey through social media and your upcoming trips this year and beyond 2023. That was it for the regular questions, Mike. This last little section is the this or that questions, where I'm going to give you two hiking topics and you kind of choose which one you prefer out of the two.
Okay.
So the first one is, do you prefer ascending or descending?
I have to say ascending to get to the top.
And do you prefer waterfalls or summits?
High point, Mike, I have to say summits. Summits for sure.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. Now, this one might be a good question for you. Do you prefer straight up or switchbacks?
So switchback technology hasn't really reached other countries other than like in the US and Europe. Even in like New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, there's not a lot of switchbacks. It's all straight up. I think I like the straight up because it's shorter.
And then when it comes to hiking, do you prefer trek poles or freehand?
I used to make fun of people who use the poles, but for longer distance hiking, the poles are amazing for your legs. So I have to go with poles.
For footwear, trail runners or hiking boots?
I just bought a pair of trail runners, but they're nice. They're more lightweight, but I prefer the hiking boots. It's just something about the boots. It feels like you're more, especially going over harder class 2, class 3 scrambling, you feel like you have more traction.
Now, when it comes to the trail itself, Mike, do you prefer a loop trail or an out and back trail?
A loop trail.
And then when you come across a body of water, especially on a hot sunny day, do you jump in or stay dry?
Even in the winter when it's like just above 32 degrees, still jump in.
Awesome. Nice, a natural ice plunge.
Yeah, or cold exactly. Plunge. Scream a little bit and then get out fast.
Now, you've been able to experience, you know, East Coast sunrises and now West Side sunsets. But when it comes to those, do you prefer sunsets or sunrises?
I like the sunrises. They feel more serene.
And, you know, Colorado has both of these, so this one might be tough, but spring flowers or fall colors?
That is a big one for Colorado, but the aspens in Colorado in the fall, the colors they put on, it's a show. And so I have to go with the fall colors.
And then the last one, Mike, is do you tag a hike or do you not tag a hike on social media?
I think it depends. For all the summits that I do, I tag the summit because it's a mountain. So it doesn't really tag the trail itself. So sometimes you still have to figure out how to get there. If it's on all trails, I'll tag it because you can type in all trails and find it easily. So I think most of the time it's just tagging the peak or where you were. If I do like an off trail hike in Rocky Mountain National Park, I won't tag it. I'll just tag Rocky Mountain National Park. So majority of the time tag it, and just because it's already so easy to find. But there are some areas I agree that shouldn't be tagged. And then as we were talking about before, it just adds to the fun of trying to find the hike itself.
No, exactly. Yeah, Mike, it's been awesome talking to you and hearing about your hiking experiences. And like I said, I look forward to seeing the upcoming adventures this year and beyond. But for folks that want to follow your journeys and your hikes, where are some of the places online that they can follow you?
The most up-to-date is my Instagram, High Point Mike. Just one word, High Point Mike. And then I also have a blog where I'm writing about my trips on the state high points, country high points, as well as starting to put some information about Colorado hikes out there. It's highpointmikeblog.com. Fortunately, High Point Mike was taken. So it's just my name with the blog at the end. So those are the two areas. I'm trying to get on TikTok. So if you want to follow me on TikTok, High Point Mike as well. But Instagram and my blog are the best.
And we'll be sure to link all three of those in the episode show notes so people can follow. And I highly recommend that you check out Mike's post on his trip to the Middle East, because he goes into a little bit more detail about his sister's experience with the visa. And, you know, the pictures from Petra are also unbelievable.
Patrick's amazing.
But Mike, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been awesome talking to you.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Ivan.
And that brings us to the end of this episode alongside Mike. We extend a heartfelt thanks to Mike for coming on the podcast. Make sure to stay connected and follow his adventures on Instagram at High Point Mike. And don't forget to check out the episode show notes for all the important links we discussed today. We have an incredible lineup of episodes planned throughout the summer, and we can't wait to share them with you. New episodes will be dropping every Monday, with occasional bonus episodes on Fridays. To ensure you never miss out on any thrilling tales, remember to hit the like and subscribe button. Your support means the world to us. Don't forget to join our vibrant community on Instagram, at Hikes and Mikes. We'll be sharing episode visuals, my own personal hiking content, and so much more. Let's stay connected and continue to inspire each other on this remarkable journey. As we bid farewell, remember to tread those happy trails, embrace the great outdoors, and keep the spirit of adventure alive. Until next time, my fellow explorers, happy hiking. A special shout out goes to our incredible audio editor, Alex, whose exceptional skills and dedication help bring each and every episode to life week after week. Thank you, Alex, for your invaluable contribution to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. This episode's music was created by Ketza. Follow him on Instagram at Ketza Music. This episode is brought to you by Flip Socks. Whether you're on the trail, on the job, or in the yard, Flip Socks will keep Mother Nature out of your boots with their innovative nylon sleeve. You no longer need to worry about any annoying debris getting trapped in your boots during your hikes. Simply flip down the nylon sleeve over any boot to prevent Mother Nature from finding its way inside, keeping your feet comfortable all day long. To get your first pair, visit flipsockswithaz.com and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for listeners who use the promo code at checkout, I'll be donating 100% of the Season 2 promo code proceeds to Big City Mountaineers, who provide transformative experiences through connections to nature that strengthen life skills and build community for youth and disinvested communities across the nation. So if you're tired of bits and pieces of the trail finding its way into your hiking boots, pick up a pair of Flip Socks today with the promo code HikesMikes10 to get 10% off. For website and promo code, see the episode description.